to general public comments. General public comments, this is the time that the public may address the council on items within its purview but not scheduled on tonight's agenda. Council or staff may briefly respond to statements or questions posed by the public. Please fill out a speaker's card, give it to our city clerk. Before speaking, you'll have 3 minutes. Those people wishing to speak on any item on schedule on tonight's agenda will be given the opportunity to do so at the time that item is being heard. First up, Linda.
Linda George, 3126 Spring Street. San Pedro Square, that's something to look at in San Jose. It's a beautiful, I remember, I don't know if anybody's ever been to the Spaghetti Factory. It opened in 1972. I was born and raised in San Jose, and it is beautiful now. They have lights all the way down. Hollister tried it. They tried the same thing, doing the alleyway. They kept their parklets, and it looks trashy. I think that if you look at San Pedro Square, you'll be really impressed with that. What I wanted is, I kept looking back because I don't see Ashley. I don't understand why the homeless person isn't here at the meetings, if everyone else is. It was pretty hot today, huh? And I think it's a real good indicator we're going to have a really revengeful summer, because last year it was muggy, but it's not as bad. I'd like to see the warming centers open. When it rained, we had one rescue. I just got some unfortunate news that the death of my brother back in September was due to negligence of the employer. He could have survived, he could have lived, had they covered the holes on the roof. So that goes back to my preaching of, we had a rescue here during the rain. And sometimes it seems very benign for those who do, you know, who watch them, but it's very important to me. Safety is very important to me. I don't know why it is. My friends hated me when we were in school. Well, they rode their Dr. Seuss bike down Highway 9. I was like, I'm not getting on it. Point being, I don't want to see these guys here. The fire department or the police department have to do any rescues. I did have a quick chat with Chief Starnetta. These are not benign. I mean, it looks easy for them because they're trained to do it. But I certainly wouldn't want to row a boat. Backwater Blues. Sorry, it's a song. I wouldn't want to row a boat and go rescue five dogs and people who don't want to listen. I understand it would be really good if we did it like in a workers' comp kind of mentality where, okay, last year we had five rescues, this year we had one, and we're going to aim for zero. Okay, so I say it every time. Now, what we don't need this summer is people fainting, getting sick, and things like that. Kimberly, she's actually placed two more people since the last time she was here, and she got a shed with her own funds. So I'm here to always put that out there. I really like the staff that works here. I think you guys like them too. They seem pretty diligent and pretty cool, and you know, it is their job to save people. So maybe we can be more mindful, and maybe Ashley can show up to a meeting or two, not just one every 4 months, so we can hear directly from her. I know she's going to a lot of meetings, just not this one.
Dale, welcome.
Dale Gustin. I'm looking forward to the concerts in the park, and a long time ago, we had a parquet dance floor there, and it disappeared. And then Main Street borrowed it and set it up, and nobody came to pick it up. So the fellow that helped me set it up and take it down, put it in the cart at a building behind the theater. So we put it in there. For 2 years, you didn't even know where it was. And then when I told you where it was, or that I had it, then Ty Lewis insisted I return it to the city property. But ever since then, nobody seems to know what happened to that parquet dance floor. I had contractors willing to put a slab in, and still, nobody seems to know what happened to that dance floor. I'd appreciate somebody locating it for me, please.
Okay. Anyone else? Public comment? Anyone online, Melissa?
No, sir.
Okay, I'll go ahead and close public comment and move on to items to be deferred. Mr. Huat?
Mayor, no items for deferral this evening.
Okay, then we'll move on to overview of items on consent calendar.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. We have six items on your consent calendar tonight. The first is the approval of your minutes from the March 3rd City Council meeting. Next was the approval of the March 4th Joint City Council Planning Commission Airport Commission Special Meeting. Item number three is the receipt of advisory body minutes. This is for three Planning Commission meetings that took place on January 13th, January 27th, and February 10th. Item number four is the warrant register. Since our last meeting, we've made, as a city, $2.3 million in payments. I'll cover those that exceed $100,000. The first is a payment to Mainline Engineering Construction. This is for the utility upgrades that are happening in the Riverside Capitol Hill area in the amount of $242,489.40. Item number two is a payment to Best Best and Krieger. This is for our December attorney's fees in the amount of $140,019.02. Next is a payment to Core Business Interiors. This is related to certain furniture, fixtures, and equipment related to the work that was done at City Hall in the amount of $169,164.10. Next is a payment to J.J. Fisher Construction. This is related to the pickleball court construction that's happening at Sherwood Park in the amount of $119,570.56. Next is a payment to USA Bank. This is related to water revenue bonds that the city issued in 2019. This comes out of the water fund in the amount of $333,791.59. And then finally, a payment to El Camino Homeless Organization, or ECHO. This is related to the contribution to the MOU agreement that we have, the city has with ECHO. This is one of the payments and equals $111,000. Item number five this evening on the consent calendar is the approval of a part-time community events coordinator job description and updated master pay schedule. I'll note that this position essentially reclasses an existing part-time position and there's no net budget impact associated with this item. And then item number six this evening is the approval of a resolution that also authorizes the corporal position to be added to the list of emergency response classifications eligible for reimbursement for mutual aid purposes. The corporal position was something that was added this last go around in terms of labor negotiations. So this is a cleanup item to make sure when, if there are mutual aid calls and assignments that we can get properly reimbursed as a city and not spend our own general fund dollars responding outside of the area. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Chris. Items on consent calendar are considered routine and do not normally require separate discussion. However, any member of the council or the public has any questions on a specific item, we can get the clarification item out in front and get those answered before the vote is taken. Secondly, any member of the council or the public that wants a full discussion of the item will cause that item to be pulled from the consent calendar and considered separately at the end of the discussion items portion of tonight's agenda. I will now ask the council if they have any questions and wish to pull any discussion item.
Mayor
Hammond. Pro Tem Gregory.
Yeah, just a brief discussion on item number five. Chris, could you just tell everybody what that's all about, please?
Yes, sir. So as you know, we had a retirement of our former Public Works Director, Frieda Berman, who also wore the hat as Special Events Coordinator, kind of informally. And with the shift, we've had to shift some different assignments around. And a lot of the special event coordination is now happening through community services. Their capacity and their resources look a little bit different than what Public Works looked like when Frieda was in the Public Works Director position. So this position on a part-time basis would help, I'm using the very scientific term, herd the cats, in terms of coordinating with special event organizers, coordinating with city departments. But again, it'll be a point person working with staff, again, to organize all the different special events that happen throughout the year, those that are occurring in downtown City Park on a regular basis, those that pop up in other parts of the city. Again, this position, there's a current part-time vacancy in the Community Services Department today. What this would do tonight is change the title create this job description, update the necessary paperwork to better define what that role would be.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Any other questions, council? Any questions from the item on this, from the public?
Number five. I actually have a lot of questions. Linda George, 3126 Spring Street.
So the first question is, this sounds like a 980-hour part-time position. It doesn't sound like it's a CalPERS position from what I read of the duty statement. So the other questions I have is, if Frida was wearing two hats and she was able to do both of these jobs at the same time, what is so compelling other than convenience to give it to CSSD because they're already planning? What I found deficient in the write-up is why you guys got there. So I understand why you want to do it, but what happens when you hire a public works director? Does their pay go down because Frida did two jobs, or was Frida just simply overworked and underappreciated? My concern about this is that at a 980-hour position with no CalPERS, that means it would eliminate retired annuitants for possibly being able to do a position like this. So maybe I'm not utterly convinced that it needs to be solo, an individual position, especially since it's part-time. I think the rate pay you put was like $23 or $26 per hour. I'm not sure that that's a really great job offer, to be really honest. So I think I'm more concerned about when you finally hire a public works director, are they gonna get paid less because you just remastered the pay scale to accommodate the same position? You know what I'm saying? That's my question, because when you finally hire the public works director, what are they going to do? And most of all, being that I've been fighting against CalPERS for 10 years, I really want to see the staff here get their CalPERS credits, because it's going to matter. CalPERS is not, it's going by the wayside. By the time some of you guys retire, it may not even be there. But somewhere down the road, hopefully there'll be some kind of compensation for that. But I'm really curious, is again, why too it became an individual position as opposed to just not making a full-time position. Another person asked me a question, and said, well, doesn't Main Street organize the majority of these events? So it does kind of, you know, found why a part-time position. I don't know if I see the necessity of it. Thank you.
Okay, anyone else? Public? Questions? Okay, Chris, you have any response? I mean,
Mayor, I'll defer to you if you'd like me to respond to anything.
Okay. All right, Fred, go ahead.
I'd like to just, the history of this. Frida did that job first. She wasn't the public works director first. She was working independently in other capacities. She was the interface between Main Street and all of its events, and the city, and the garbage company, and all these other places. And she was very good at organizing everybody else around in the support mechanisms, and in gaining the permits that were necessary in order to have these events. So when she moved up to the Public Works Department, there was nobody who knew how to do all the things she used to do. So she just kept doing it. But now we have a whole different situation because we have that position, very specifically as Public Works Director. And it doesn't include that kind of thing, yet that kind of thing is needed. So I believe that's why we're doing this. It's a historic matter. Thank you.
Okay, Pro Tem Gregory?
Yeah, I'd like to move that we approve.
Well, okay, we're going to close it and bring it back to us, but that was just a question. Anyone online? Okay, we'll bring it back to council for direction and or discussion.
I'd like to move we approve items 1-6 on the consent agenda.
Second.
Okay, motion by Gregory, second by Bausch. Discussion? Okay, we'll call the question.
Councilmember Gregory?
Aye.
Councilmember Bausch?
Aye.
Councilmember Beal?
Aye.
Councilmember Strong?
Aye.
Mayor Hammond?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Well, they'll move on then to public hearings. We'll open the public hearing. First up tonight is approval of resolution updating establishing city development services, user fees for various regulatory activities, programs, and services. And Catherine, you have our program here.
I sure do. Good evening, Mr. Mayor and City Council members. My name is Catherine Piatti, and I'm the finance manager here at the city. I'm excited to have the opportunity to be back with you this evening to share phase two, also our final phase, of our user and regulatory fee study and proposed fee updates, this time for our development services fees. So as you may recall, back in September, we brought forth phase one of our fee study, which included all of our public safety fees as well as our non-development services fees. As with the fees in phase one, the fees that we are presenting tonight for development services are also deemed to be those in which a particular individual or group is the primary beneficiary of those city services, as opposed to the public at large. Therefore, it's more equitable to charge for that particular individual or group for those services rather than funding them out of general taxes. Once fees are typically approved, they are added to our comprehensive fee schedule, which is then reviewed annually by city staff for inflationary adjustments as well as other minor adjustments. And while these annual reviews are efficient for those minor types of adjustments, it's important for the city to conduct a full evaluation of its fees in order to really understand the charges that we're charging for services, the costs that go into that, and make sure those two remain in alignment over the years. So you may also recall from our last presentation that the last time the city conducted a full user fee study was back in 2005. And although those annual reviews and many adjustments have been made over the years, it was time that we were long overdue for a full fee study. So to remedy this, the city enlisted ClearSource Financial Consulting to facilitate a user fee study. And over the past year, our consultant has been working very closely with department staff to identify and understand the services that we provide, identify all the costs associated with providing those services, and then ultimately propose updates to our fees as well as some of our fee structures in order to better align with city operations. So with that, I'd like to welcome back and reintroduce to you our consultant with ClearSource Financial Consulting, Terry Madsen, to present the details of our development services fees.
Welcome.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council. Thank you for allowing me to speak with you again this evening. I know you have a full agenda, so I'll make my way quickly through this presentation and be available to receive any feedback or questions that you have. So just by way of orientation, I think the presentation is about 10 to 12 minutes long. We'll talk about background, some fundamentals and terminology. And as a council, you're familiar with this. The concepts are similar to what you heard in the fall for the non-development related fees. And then we'll talk specifically about Paso Robles and next steps for council consideration. So as Ms. Piatti mentioned, communities generally use general tax dollars to provide general broad community-wide services, and they use user and regulatory fees when they see a direct receiver of service. Most commonly, we think of this as permit processing, plan review, construction-related inspections, and so forth. This particular study is limited to examination of service-based fees for what we would think of as development-related fees. It's important to note we are not examining any taxes, any assessments, or any utility rates, the things that residents sort of experience on a day-to-day basis. These things are more periodic in nature and discretionary in nature. And we're also not examining any development impact fees. So anything linked to infrastructure is outside the scope of this project. This is specific services provided by staff or consultants. This item has been presented to the Housing Constraints and Opportunities Committee. It was presented on February 12, 2026. And at the conclusion of that meeting, the committee unanimously supported advancing the proposed fee updates that are before you this evening for your consideration. So as Ms. Piatti mentioned, the city does examine fees on a recurring basis. You make adjustments. You are common throughout California in terms of cities doing this type of work. The number one reason you perform studies like this is to comply with legal requirements, because these are fees and not taxes. You have some fundamental parameters that you want to honor. Number one is you do not want to be in the profit-making business. This is the idea of cost recovery And then you want to establish fees that are proportional to sort of level of effort. So if something is complex in nature, it would have a higher cost assigned to it than something that's minor in nature. And then I would like to just highlight this final bullet point. One of the main reasons communities like Paso Robles and other cities throughout the state conduct these types of studies is because when you establish user and regulatory fees that recover your costs of service, you position Paso Robles to continue to meet the service level expectation of your community, in this case, your development community. I mentioned that these are fees. Because they're fees, they are adopted by the City Council at the conclusion of a public hearing. We also like to stress that the idea is that fees would be dynamic. As a council, you establish them. Paso Robles has done a great job of adjusting and recalibrating from time to time, and we would anticipate that you would continue doing that. So you adopt fees, and then as your organization changes, as state legislation changes, as your community changes, you refine and recalibrate as necessary. In our presentation, our staff report, we mentioned these concepts of cost of service, cost recovery, subsidy. The council has heard these concepts before, so I'll move quickly through them. As a reminder, we are dealing with only service-based fees here, so we're thinking primarily about some labor happening. When we value labor, we can think specifically about is this a complex review or is this a relatively simple review? Complex review, more effort required. Simple review, less effort required. Lower cost of service, higher cost of service. The cost of service represents your ceiling. That's what you are allowed to recover as a city. And a lot of times city councils think through this idea of who is benefiting. When they understand what is the cost of service, then they make a decision about, do I want to recover that cost from the receiver of service or from the general public through tax dollars? And frequently what we see is in these development-related services, we see a very direct beneficiary, and so councils typically do target higher cost recovery levels. In Paso Robles, historically, you have targeted full cost recovery for these services. You have deliberately set time and materials fees, so you're trying to encourage high-quality applications, you're trying to encourage efficiency, and really just trying to say, I will recover the costs associated with this review, not more or not less. This study simply provides you an opportunity to recalibrate because it's been some years since you examined them closely. As a reminder on this slide, what this is trying to illustrate is that if the city incurs a cost, it can make a strategic decision to recover less than that cost, but it still incurs the cost. In a particular area that you recover less than full cost of service is sign permitting, review of permits for signs in the downtown area where you're trying to encourage community beautification and so forth. So you may choose to make deliberate policy choices to recover less than the full cost of service in certain areas, but you as a city still incur that cost. So now, specific to Paso Robles, what this study recommends, what's before the council this evening, is the continued use of primarily deposit-based billings. So what this says is, when an applicant comes and requests service, you collect an initial deposit, you walk them through what they're likely to expect, and you tell them if there's deposit funds available at the conclusion of this project, they'll be refunded to you. If the project turns more intensive than anticipated, or it lasts over an extended period of time, we'll ask to replenish that deposit. You will continue that operation. And then when you have fixed fees for service, in some cases you use fixed fees for service. This is when the project is more homogeneous in nature and staff sort of knows what to expect from project to project to project. Those fixed fees have been recalibrated to align to your cost of service. Generally, full cost recovery is targeted from these fees because they're regulatory in nature and because we see sort of this clear beneficiary in terms of enhanced property values, enjoyment of the construction, and so forth. As staff provided an idea for the City Council in terms of the impact on a new home development, and we mentioned this to the housing, the Housing Constraints and Opportunities Committee, this idea that we are looking at the service-based fees. There are a myriad of fees that apply, but most of them are linked to sort of infrastructure-related impacts of construction. And so for what you'll see is, if you were to build a new single-family home, the fees will vary depending on the project and so forth, but to give an applicant an idea, there would be about a $3,000 difference in the total permit cost. This would vary from permit to permit, but this is to give you a sense of what's being considered here. So in terms of fiscal impact, because you use time and materials billing and you use a whole bunch of deposits, we're not actually proposing to modify a lot of your hourly billing rates. They've been modified from time to time, and so they still are really in line with your current cost of service. So what we're recommending to staff is to sort of monitor your development activity and make adjustments as needed, but your revenues will depend on the projects that come in the door. This is really a recalibration effort. I mentioned that because these are fees, they're adopted by the City Council at the conclusion of the public hearing. This is your opportunity to make that decision. If you have any questions or feedback from me, I'm happy to receive it. Thank you so much for your time and attention.
Very good. Questions? Jared?
Very good.
Councilman Bausch.
Thank you. So this is information. Is this our public hearing tonight? Okay. Do we need to open a public hearing? We'll do that. Thank you. The fee differential from the 8,000 to 11,000, for example, an individual homeowner could expect to pay fees. Would there be any sliding scale for, say, a housing development of 40 or 50 units?
That's currently not proposed. I think one of the reasons this fee has gone up is we hadn't done much tract development or single family over the last 20 years. In the last 2 years, we've done a significant amount. So we have a really good handle now on really how many hours it takes both to issue the permits and then to do the field inspection. So the building department's really comfortable with that number. That's based on real world data.
And I'm still not sure that answers my question. Is it the same for one house as it is for 50 houses?
Yeah, that's basically what we're getting off these master, you know, merchant builders out at Olson. That's what it's costing the city to provide those services.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, over here. Any questions?
Fees and things like that. Because you,
Craig, you have any questions? Councilman Strong.
What if the builder is building the same unit, so that it's already been approved? Now it's the identical unit, just going on a different lot. That's a cookie cutter lot.
So I have some more information about this. Hi, I'm Devin with the building department. So this particular example is what we would have on our website for an infill lot. So just somebody that's building, this is deposit based. If it's really efficient, there are some opportunities for some partial refunds for the inspection deposit. So we were asked by the Housing Constraints and Opportunities Committee to look at the comparison of what we expect today versus what these fees are proposing. We do already have some fees in our fee schedule, and they will still be proposed that are for production housing. So essentially, we do a plan check on a single family residence that's a stock plan, and then we know that they're a little bit more efficient with calling in inspections. We're looking at multiple houses at one time, so we have taken that into account where that is more of the flat fee. The fees are slightly lower than this, but really it is still all based off of cost recovery and what we've experienced with the track so far.
Thank you.
Devin, a quick question. I had one for you too. With regard to, just for instance, the permit and plan review, I'm assuming that's for a residential single family. Therefore, it looks like 25% more is what's proposed.
So what there is the plan review aspect, and then there's the inspection aspect.
That's where I was going. So is this, are all of our plan reviews sent out, or do we do them in-house still, or how is that?
This is a little bit of a mixture. So this would be like the submittal fee. So we still have associated staff time. So we have administrative time that's throughout the life of a permit. So that's all the way from submittal all the way through the certificate of occupancy. So that might be plan check, any of that correspondence. So it's accounting for that staff time in addition to plan check.
Throughout the project, essentially, mm-hmm. is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
Of course.
Councilman Bausch.
Devin?
Sorry.
I waited for you to get all the way back. Sorry about that. So if the city, and I don't mean to speak for everybody, but I'm assuming that this is kind of a prevalent view, if we want to encourage workforce or affordable housing, and given the fact we saw in one of the slides that there is a delta that the city can choose to absorb, is there any mechanism or should the city council, could the city council consider offering some kind of a sliding scale for workforce housing?
Well, you already do that to a certain degree on tax credit projects. So I think at your last meeting, you waived the fees or deferred the fees for affordable projects. So you do have some policies on that. I guess the issue is, you know, defining exactly what would be the qualifications for a deferral or a waiver or a subsidy, basically.
So, if, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm hearing yes, but kind of on a case-by-case basis, the way it's handled now?
I think it's something you have the discretion to do that, to subsidize certain classes of permits. I think the trick's going to be defining it so it's clear to everybody what it takes to qualify
sure.
for that.
Do we need additional studies for that?
So I think it's really more of a case by case, and it depends on the project that comes
sure.
forward. The other concern is that it can trigger prevailing wage for an entire project. So if a project's trying not to, to trigger prevailing wage and do it without certain subsidies. So I think what we find most effective is to have the fee set. And then as projects come in, we can look at it, and you can always, as a council, make an exception. And we do deferral agreements, and there are some other ways to structure those transactions so they're more beneficial to the applicant for if they're trying to leverage public funds, it gets them bonus dollars if we do it one way versus another.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in my experience across the state, we find the flexibility of just having a flat fee, regular fee, and then project by project analysis.
Thank you for that.
Thank you. Okay. All the questions then for council at this point. We'll open it up then to the public. Anyone wishing to have a question on this item?
Hi, Linda George, 3126 Spring Street. So, yet again, I don't like to get into this, but so you're talking about $11,000 for the work that the city does to plan and review and inspect for a single family home. So my question is, because like right here, they're starting a 6 ADU. I mean, I live right here, Warren, and they're building right there. Okay, so 6 ADU buildings, are they considered a single family home, and are they gonna be subjected? So if Mr. Anguiano gets his way, he's gonna have 6 ADUs on one property. And like I say, at Grover Beach City Council, just because you guys can doesn't mean you should be building all these tall buildings. So what's the estimate to him? So is it $11,000 for each ADU? And then does one each need to singly pass the inspection? My understanding on that project next to me, right here, Warren, is like 2 feet away. You know, they're already working on it. So does that mean that he's gonna have to pay that? I mean, I know I heard him outside the other day saying he bit off more than he can chew with the six. So when do you guys come in and then at that aspect say, okay, well, maybe we can only do four. So I'm more concerned about people building ADUs because there's a lot of legislation coming in again in housing. There was 1,800 bills that were submitted to the state legislature this year, a lot of housing bills, particularly in, you know, eviction protections and things like that. So is this ADU considered a single family dwelling unit?
Anyone else? Do we have anyone online, Melissa? All right, we'll close the public hearing, bring it back to council for direction on this one. Yeah, go ahead, Warren.
Yeah, I'll have Devin come up. ADUs are kind of tricky. She can explain how those fees work.
Hello again. So as far as it comes from staff time, there are a lot of similar inspections, and so more simple projects, again, that have these inspection deposits are eligible for partial refunds. There are a lot of other fees that are associated with a single family residence that would not be associated with an ADU. So there's certain triggers for the size and square footage for those. So we're talking about the development impact fees. If you build something that's 750 square feet or less, there are no development impact fees. So those are all things that we do present and let people know about. This particular example is just, again, for that infill single family residence. And so we do also have ADU estimates online, but there's a lot less significant fees for the totals, water connection, wastewater connection, development impact fees. So it's, there's, but staff time in some of these projects, we aren't spending as much staff time, but we do have similar inspections, but there's that opportunity for refund.
Okay. Mayor, if I may, just to clarify.
Yeah, go ahead.
Just real quick, I wanted to just add to Devin's point is that the state has preempted
yes
quite a bit of those fees from being collected or assessed for ADU type of projects. And so when we talk about fees being less for ADUs, a large portion of the reason why is because the state does not allow us as a city to collect those fees, nor can we sufficiently plan for ADUs in terms of infrastructure build out and capacity additions to our sewer system and water system. We're essentially precluded from collecting fees that would then go to help grow and right size the system for those types of units.
Pro Tem Gregory.
Yeah, so Devin, while I've got you up there. So it sounds like the project that Linda's describing, if there's six ADUs, they're not ADUs. They're six small individual units. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
I feel like the ADU laws change all of the time, so I don't know specifically which project it is. And some projects are portions are ADUs, some are multifamily, and our fee schedule does break down that once you are reaching more housing, we are looking at everything at the same time, which then is more efficient, less staff time, equaling less expensive. Okay. And it's the same way with inspections. We're typically inspecting multiple units at a time, which makes it a lot more efficient and less expensive as a total for the permits, and then again that partial refund.
Katie Bannister, you want to add something?
Come on up.
Okay.
Katie, just,
yeah.
You got a thought, let's hear it.
You were making
your way up. She's our ADU gal.
Where's the explanation?
I think the question was asked, can you put six ADUs on a lot? And the state law does continue to change. So in multifamily zones, you can have one ADU for every multifamily unit up to eight. So if there are eight multifamily units on a lot, you can have eight ADUs. I don't know the particulars Ms. George's neighbor, but if there are six primary residences on the lot, six multifamily houses, they could indeed build six ADUs.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Thank you, Katie.
Okay, all the questions then from council? Okay, thank you, staff. We'll go ahead and then bring it back for a discussion and or action.
Mayor Hammond.
Pro Tem Gregory.
I move we approve resolution 26XXX, updating, establishing various user regulatory fees for various city regulatory activities, programs, and services set forth in a comprehensive fee schedule.
Second.
Okay. So we have a motion by Gregory, second by Beal. Discussion. Okay, we'll call for the question, Melissa.
Councilmember Gregory?
Aye.
Councilmember Beal?
Aye.
Councilmember Bausch?
Aye.
Councilmember Strong?
Aye.
Mayor Hammond?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Okay. Moving on, open public hearing for item two, first reading by title only, an ordinance of the Pascagoula Municipal Code to amend the Borky Specific Plan and associate rezoning and approval of the resolutions approving the mitigated negative declaration addendum of the general plan amendment. Darren Nash, you have that item for.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. My name is Darren Nash. I'm the city planner for the city.
This is a project for the Allegretto Vineyard Resort. This is at 2700 Buena Vista Drive. So Buena Vista Drive is north of Highway 46 East, and the existing Allegretto is on Buena Vista on the south side of Dallas Drive. What we're looking at today is, looking up at the proposal here, the green shaded area is the existing Allegretto site. The cross-hatched area, or what's been called the bow tie piece, is being requested to include that project into the Allegretto Resort project. So that piece is owned by Cuesta College, was determined to be surplus, and the college is working with Ayers Company to incorporate that in the Ayers property. So what we need to do, since the existing designations is public facilities, the current general plan designation, the current zoning designation, as well as the designations in the Borky specific plan, are public facilities for that cross-hatched red piece. So we are looking to change the designations to parks and open space and add a resort lodging overlay. So that is what's being asked for the council to look at this evening, along with the development plan for the expansion of the resort, and along with the conditional use permit for operating the resort. And this kind of summarizes what I included. So what we're looking at doing is changing the designation. So back in 2012, so this has given us an idea of what was done in 2012 to accommodate the existing Allegretto. The piece that the resort currently sits on was originally zoned R2, multifamily. So back when Mr. Ayers came forward with this project, the Planning Commission, along with the City Council, had to go through a rezone, general plan amendment to the Borky specific plan, and add that resort lodging overlay and change it from R2 to parks and open space. So what we're asking to look at tonight is to do the same thing for that cross-hatched bow tie piece, to bring it into the current designations to allow for the resort development. Also, coming along with the development plan and the request for the changes is the approval of an addendum to the mitigated negative declaration. So in 2012, there was a mitigated negative declaration that was approved for the project, and the request of the expansion for this project is to, it's a 10.8 acre piece, to redesignate it, to approve the development plan and the use permit, and to approve an addendum to the original mitigated negative declaration for this additional piece. The matrix on the side goes through all the different buildings proposed, their sizes, basically the project description for the expansion project. In terms of the environmental on this property, it's relatively flat. The roads are developed on either side, the Dallas side and the Buena Vista side. Biologically, there were some minor surveys necessary for some species that are looked at into now that weren't back in 2012. So the biological report updated that. The greenhouse gas and air quality was updated for basically to list the best management practices for dust control, for construction noise, that kind of thing, was updated with the addendum. And then transportation was looked at for this expansion project. In terms of the CEQA component for transportation, the city's traffic engineer looked at it and evaluated that less than significant impact for vehicle miles traveled, or VMT. So the requirement for transport, one of the things they did recommend is a transportation demand management plan for large events. That component was added as a condition of approval of their development plan and use permit. Site plan here is showing the, you know, the large pink square building is the existing resort. The northerly buildings along the curved Downs Drive are what's being proposed at the addition. Some of those buildings are on going over the current site, as well as incorporated into that 10.8-acre bow tie piece. We're looking at 93 hotel rooms, a conference center, a new restaurant, viticulture building, and other amenity structures for this new expansion plan. And this is a site plan, and it's showing the phasing of the project. Phase one is up towards the corner, would include additional rooms, the convention center. The architect is in attendance tonight and will give you more of a specific rundown of the project and the phasing components. Era Studio Architects is involved with this project. They are here tonight, will provide a presentation. This project was taken to the Development Review Committee. It was also taken before the Planning Commission. Incorporations in terms of some colors and materials, some more details on the buildings that front Downs Drive was requested. Those have all been included in these plans and were included with the Planning Commission presentation, and the Planning Commission in the end recommended that the project move to the City Council for approval. So the Planning Commission reviewed this on February 24th. They, on a 6-0 vote, recommended that the Council approve the resolution for the mitigated negative declaration addendum, approve the authorization of the general plan amendment, and they approved that the Council move forward for first reading an ordinance for the specific plan amendment and the rezone. They also approved the resolution authorizing the development plan and the conditional use permit for the project. There are a couple specific changes to a couple of the engineering conditions. Our city engineer has been working with the applicant to change some wording in the recommendation or the conditions of approval related to off-site improvements. Those are included in red. Again, this is just specifics and also some language referring to the ability to have a reimbursement agreement for the heirs for off-site improvements that they're doing beyond what's necessary for their project.
Darren, so, could you read those, because it's too small for us to get to them.
Sure, there's one of the changes is there's some curb ramp work that curb ramp extensions that has been added to the condition. That's that letter A in red that was added, and then the bottom sentence was regarding that reimbursement option there. And then in the second condition, again, was a curb extension and median. This is dealing with Buena Vista Road and Experimental Station. But it's more specific detail about the construction of median extensions and bulb outs.
Very good, thank you.
So what we're looking at tonight is for the City Council to either option one is take no action, or option two, introduce for first reading title and ordinance for the specific plan amendment rezone, adopt the resolutions approving the mitigated negative declarations, general plan amendment, development plan, and conditional use permit, or option three is amend resolutions and ordinance, or four is to provide alternative direction to staff. The recommendation is option one, approving these four components resolution D, including those changes to engineering conditions B6 and B7. So with that, I'd have any questions, but I do want to have you allow the applicant to provide a presentation that gets more specific into site planning, architecture, buildings, those
okay.
kinds of things.
Why don't we quickly ask Darren if there's any questions. Pro Tem Gregory?
Yeah, just real quick, Darren. So the actual general plan would convert the, however you describe that, northern piece into the public open space and with the overlay? So that would be resort and lodging overlay?
That would change the designations that are currently public facilities.
Right, right.
Because it was a college.
Got it.
To parks and open space, which right. is consistent with the existing zoning of the resort.
Okay.
And then put a resort lodging overlay over that parks and open space zoning.
And just in that one particular zone, or is it already existing on their existing piece?
It's already existing on the existing
that was my question. Okay.
resort area. This would just be that crosshatch, 10.8 Good. Acres.
Yeah. Easy. Thank you.
Real quick question. Does the resort and lodging have to have parks and open space? I mean, is that one classification as a whole, or can we just have resorts only?
We're dealing with the existing major property, a 40-acre piece, being zoned parks and open space, so we're okay. making it consistent. There are options for resort lodging zoning, but we want to be consistent with the existing 38 acres because it's combining into
within the Barkey specific plan.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Got it. Okay. Councilman Bausch.
I like the proposal. I mean, I speak. I think it's a great addition if council decides to move forward. But I have to ask a couple questions. The property is currently owned by Cuesta College?
From what I understand, the heirs company is in working with the ownership to
transfer title.
Transfer it. And Mr. Ayers is here, and I'm sure can provide more specific.
And I almost hesitate to ask this question, but hopefully they can address this. If it's owned by a community college district, does that trigger any Surplus Land Act considerations that have to be met?
It does, and
okay.
that process went through that process. We
Perfect.
Want to make sure that before we went through development plan and changes that process had been completed.
Way ahead of me. Thank you very much. And then I'm not sure if it's this particular piece is impacted, but when that site was donated to Cuesta College, there may have been a deed restriction on if it ever changed use. It may revert back to the donor. Was that addressed? And I may be mistaken on that site.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with.
Yeah, so that would be an issue between Cuesta College and the purchaser. It wouldn't impact our ability to do the entitlements, which is all we're being asked.
Why?
We have land use authority. We are not looking at the title issues. Those are between Cuesta College and the purchaser. So if there's a deed restriction that prohibits them from doing this, we can still entitle it to do it. They may not be able to develop it. That would be enforced under the title insurance policy.
But if it did, and I'm asking not to argue with you, but if the land goes back to the original donor, does that change its zoning as well?
No.
Okay. It would remain public facility. So if it remains public facility, would it be better to wait until that was sorted out, if it needs to be sorted out?
Sorry, there's a
hopefully it doesn't. You can wave at me. That's okay. Wave me off. Wave me off.
Quiet.
Okay.
No. So right now it's public facility. If they sell it and he wants to develop it as a commercial property and there's a deed restriction that prohibits that, he'll get sued by whoever
Excellent.
Donated the land.
Perfect. Thank you.
It won't impact us. If we change it to hotel and resort and he owns it and they find out that he's done that, he'll get sued and doesn't impact us.
That sounds good. I'm just Appreciate that answer. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay. Any other questions from council? Maybe if we can have the architect come up and do his presentation. Welcome.
Good evening. I'm Tom Jess with Aris Studio Architects. We're here representing this project. The owner of the project, Doug Ayers, is also here. He's in the audience. If there's anything that I can't answer, he certainly can. First off, thank you for having us here. This is a very exciting project. It's something that is going to expand an already impressive resort that's here on the site. Just to clarify what we're talking about, I think the Google Earth image does a pretty good job of explaining what we're looking at. The bow tie portion up at the top is the expansion area, and the existing Allegretto Resort is the building on the lower portion there. This is the proposed site plan, and I'll walk you through each of the different areas and kind of explain what we're doing there. But just real briefly, this area up in this portion here is the conference center, and the pickleball courts are up in that portion there. The spa hotel is located right there. And then moving east is the Allegretta Hotel. And then there's a piazza over there that's anchored by the Allegretta Piazza on one side, a small building that we'll walk through, and then the Abbey on the other side. Up in the upper portion are the villas. We'll walk through those. And so staff mentioned, we have gone through the presentation to the DRC and to the Planning Commission. I just kind of wanted to walk through some of the changes that have been incorporated through that process. So one of them is we did remove the solar canopies in the parking lot and added more landscaping, so it's a natural shading of the parking area. We did that on both of the parking lots. There was a sound wall or a wall that we had constructed there, and I think this is more just a technical, or we had it labeled as 22 feet tall, but that's too tall. So we brought it down to 7 feet tall. That was a comment that was made there. And then also we added some dense arborvitae landscape screening over there on the end of the property there, where there is some construction in the kind of the back of house type area. So we screened that area there. So now I'm just going to kind of walk through each of the different buildings and different areas. So the conference center and the pickleball courts, you can see it's a large building with the grand salon, the meeting rooms. This is a big conference center. We've incorporated the pre-function space along with the concourse and the arcade. And there's a big catering kitchen that would serve both of those banquet facilities. And then the architecture of the buildings, you'll see as we walk through, builds off of the existing Allegretto architecture that's there, which is the lime plaster, the clay tile roofs, the Italian look and feel, the extensive ironwork and the black wrought iron type of look and feel to it, and lots of the stacked stone as well. So I'll kind of walk you through that. So we'll start with the conference center here. You can see the arcades that have the elliptical arches that carry you through on either side and kind of create that shade and that shadow space, so it's not a direct sunlight right into the spaces there. And then there's the very clear entry element with the tower element there that you'll see from the parking area, make it really easy to identify. The other area, this is a really exciting one, this is the spa hotel.